You are listening to CEO Minutes, brought to you by Offutt Kerman, attorneys at law, your perfect legal partner.
I'm Nick Arnold, the president of Arnold Packaging.
So you want to walk us through the founding of, so it was Arnold Factory Supplies in 1933, and then, you know, this long history transformation up to 2016 into Arnold Packaging.
Sure, yeah, we started in 1933 at the base of the Brahma Seltzer Tower. So he's always been here in Baltimore City. About 10 years after that, we moved to South Charles Street, which is now Federal Hill, right at the corner of Charles and Montgomery. Continued from there onto Hanover Street, staying in the 21230 into a 35,000 square foot manufacturing facility where we existed for about 50 years. Along the way, we started off as a manufacturer of glues and marking inks used in primarily railroad applications. So when cartons were closed prior to pressure-sensitive box sealing tape like they are now, you would manually apply glue to the flaps and you would hold them together. So we started out by making glue out of basically animal fat-based materials. And then as manufacturers started to get more involved in packaging, like 3M and some other companies, they came to us and asked us to distribute into the Baltimore market, which was loaded with manufacturing at the time between Western Electric, General Electric, Bethlehem Steel, Bethlehem Ship, Westinghouse in those days. So we started to get into the distribution business there, and now we distribute for companies like 3M and Signode, Sealed Air, who are the top manufacturers in the industry. Along the way, in the 50s, my father hired the head of the wood box manufacturing plant at the Glen L. Martin Company, a gentleman named Bill Foose, to come over and start a wood box building business for us. So first we got into wood box manufacturing, and then expanded into corrugated manufacturing as well, as we started to find people that needed that and they wanted to buy smaller quantities and quick turns of specialized boxes. So we got into the wood box manufacturing business somewhere in the early 50s and still continue to manufacture boxes out of both wood and cardboard.
And so then 2016 you decided to change the brand from Arnold, especially packaging, to Arnold Packaging. How has that changed the company, and what has the impact on the brand rebranding then?
Yeah, so we'd always had some conversations along the way about being called Arnold's Factory Supplies. It definitely had a little bit of a dated look and feel to it. The word factory is not really used with any prevalence anymore. They're plants and manufacturing facilities. So the logo and everything about it was just starting to look a little bit dated. We always consider it to be, you know, durable and reliable, but we wanted to take a look at upgrading the appearance, making it look a little more high-tech in nature, because we are. We deploy a tremendous amount of technology here. Our customers are very technical in nature. We use a lot of different software products, so we made the choice to go ahead and rebrand to Arnold Packaging, A, because it's really what we do. It's our core business by far. But then also to update the look and the feel to be a little more edgy, and knowing that one of our biggest challenges is attracting talent, and we know we want to be able to refresh and attract good young talent, and that's important to them. But then also be very clear and intentional about our message to our customers that we are a packaging company first and almost exclusively.
What's a good segue into, you know, what's special? You seem to be more than just a packaging company. You know, what's special about Arnold Packaging? What's special that you do for your clients?
Well, we have three different divisions, so we've got some nice diversity. Our container manufacturing plant is highly specialized and highly customized. We're working with people that are manufacturing aerospace, electronics, and weaponry for military. So most of our solutions on that side are generally one customer, one product. We have a full engineering staff and support team that creates all of the intellectual property. So a customer will approach us with a very complicated product that they're trying to ship. Generally it's export, so it could be shipped anywhere on the planet. And we're going to look at the product and understand what the design criteria is. We're going to understand all of the steps in the supply chain and all of the touch points, and then we're going to design a very specific container to meet their needs. We also have a distribution division. Part of that is Arnold Automation, where we are helping customers with productivity needs. So we are designing and suggesting and implementing equipment and automation to help with productivity, and that is generally to get more product out the door. So we do a lot of different things. In that regard, we also have a service business and division. So everything that we sell in the way of hardware, we also repair. So it's very full, very complete line, but still based in and around packaging.
How did you decide to pivot into, or it wasn't a pivot, maybe just a transformation into automation and supporting your customers with services and technology and other equipment?
We've always been in the automation business, but primarily or exclusively end of line. So if we had a customer that wanted to set up a box, fill a box, close it, palletize it, we've always been there. But we had an opportunity to partner with Ready Robotics, which is a Baltimore-based company, and it really gave us the opportunity to go upstream into assembly and get into true robotic arms. And in doing so, realized that it's a different type of sale than the packaging side of our business. So we decided to create a division around it called Arnold Automation, which is a lot more high tech in nature. The selling cycles are longer. It's a lot more technical in nature. The decision makers are different. We're dealing with engineers, we're dealing with owners, we're dealing with directors in those pursuits. So we wanted to break out a very specialized sales force and engineering team to partner and help the customer through the process.
Does being in automation help packaging, and being in packaging help automation? It's kind of an integrated sales approach.
It does, yeah. So they're very synergistic in nature. Our packaging sales team also promotes the automation side, and what they're doing is they're bringing in specialists when they find an opportunity. So all of our customers that are using automation are packaging things, and usually if they're calling us in, it's because they're packaging a lot and they're looking for productivity opportunities, usually because they can't get the amount of workforce that they need to keep up with the demands that they have.
So, unique opportunity to start in the business at 13, because you were only child,
yeah.
You grew up in the business. Do you want to walk us through some of the, what that was like?
Sure.
And, you got to work with your grandfather or?
I did just a little bit. So I'd always been around the business. I was always intrigued by what was going on here. My father exposed me very early. And to the fun stuff, you know, I was hanging on the back of the fork truck and riding around on carts and making boomerangs out of plywood, all the fun things that a little boy would want to do. And it was 13 because in seventh grade, I got my first C in school. So that was the year that I spent a good chunk of the summer learning how to make wood boxes, learning how to make cardboard boxes. And so it taught me a couple of things. One, it taught me that I needed to work harder in school, and that while I love making wood boxes and being with the guys in the plant, that I didn't want to do it exclusively for my whole life. And I think it was probably that year too that I think we were in a customer's facility and the buyer, probably from General Electric, and he said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I want to work in packaging. And that's probably at that moment that my father looked at it and said, okay, this is something that's legitimate. This is our succession plan, and started putting the pieces in place for me to do that.
So I'm going to show that to my son, who just got a C.
Oh, boy. Well, look, he can come up here and work anytime he wants.
Yeah,
now, look, we probably had, Steve Bisciotti's son worked here. Oh yeah, he had a little brush where he didn't think his grades were where they should be, so he spent some time here. We probably had 10, 15 kids that someone said, yeah, Junior's not paying attention. My father, I would say, well, we can get him to pay attention. Let's haul some 4x4s around on a good August day, and I think they'll be back ready to work.
So what were some of the challenges being the son of the owner and working in the business and seemingly a path to where you are today? You were seemingly groomed to be doing what you're doing.
Certainly I had, credibility and trust. I had to prove to them that I wasn't, entitled or a lazy kid, and that really at the end of the day, I had their best interest at heart. I wanted the company to get better and that done correctly, they would be there too. I always worked closely with them. I never really, any type of reluctance, I never really felt it. I felt like I worked pretty closely with the people around and that they understood that I got it.
You have a lot of people who have been here for their whole lives, their whole careers?
Yeah, we do. We have, I just did the analysis the other day. Out here on our wall, we have 11 people that have over 15 years of experience out of 57. And our average length of tenure, if you take out everybody later than 2 years, is 13 years. Okay. So yeah, so we have a lot of tenure. We have very limited turnover, and people, when they come, they stay.
What do you think has been, there's not just one reason, but if you could if there's a philosophy or behind the 85-year sustainable business model. You know, what do you think it, what can you attribute it to most?
For us, it's innovation. I'm curious by nature. I tend to surround myself with people that are curious. We look for that. That's you know, part of our culture is curiosity and never really accepting the way we do it now and looking to get better and do things differently. So curious is definitely one. We're also very high energy. There's a lot going on over here. It's like a typical small business. There's lots of tasks that need to get done. We don't have a lot of extra people hanging around. So when we want to take on something new, a new project, that capacity comes out of people working harder. So we're curious, which then drives innovation. You know, that curiosity then done correctly would transform into innovation. And we've looked to do things differently than our competitors or differently than our customers thought and then take it to them. And so you mix a little curiosity with some innovation and then some really hard work. And I'd say that's how you get here.
So it's probably a good segue into talking about your leadership team. You want to tell us about the team and then how they work together and what they've contributed to the success?
The first thing I would say about them is they're diverse. I have three directs. I have a CFO, a VP of sales, and a VP of ops, or really a VP and GM. And they're diverse. So each one is from a different decade. They're 50, 40, 30. And I have gender diversity too. So the first thing I would say about them is they're diverse. So their perspectives are different. They're different than mine. And their skill sets are different. One's a degreed engineer, one is an MBA, and one is a lifelong top-notch salesperson. So there's a lot of diversity there, a lot of capability. So and therefore when we're together and we're collaborating, it's the collection of all of our ideas that get us to the solutions.
I guess not too long ago, MSNBC was here to talk about the impact on the recent tax cuts to manufacturers. So you want to just walk us through what the impact of the tax cuts will be on Arnold Packaging and what you plan on doing with some of the benefits as far as
sure.
capital expenditures and reinvestment?
Yeah, for us as a little business, it's about cash. So there's a number of different ways. I mean, simply lowering the rate is helpful to us. It helps in things like quarterly tax payments where we now have extra cash that we wouldn't have had historically to deploy and reinvest either in equipment or people. The 179, the increase of the 179 deduction to $1 million is very helpful where we can now buy more equipment and we can depreciate it faster, which gives us immediate tax benefit. So we have invested at least $250,000 each year in our plant in new equipment and productivity gains. This year, we also increased salaries back to the employees, an average of just over 4%. So we're also making investments back into our workforce. Education, we do a tremendous amount of continuing education. We have guys in the plant that want to become drivers. We're helping train them. We have guys in the plant that want to get into low voltage electrical. So they would be candidates into our automation group going forward. So we're looking to find that talent internally, invest in it either to continue to do what they're doing or to help us in maybe a future venture, because we're always looking for talent and then to convert talent.
You don't have any international competition where someone's trying to come in and drop products that are cheaper. You know, packaging people can't do what you guys are doing.
It depends. So great question, and it depends on which particular product you're talking about. So if there's one thing that creates a barrier to entry for us, it's freight. So if you look at parts of our line that are freight intensive, like bubble wrap and certain supply items that aren't necessarily efficient, it's more difficult. Wooden shipping containers, which are very large and empty, creates a barrier to entry. But there are other products like cheap box sealing tapes, things that do move a little more freight efficient that we do have to be careful of, we do have to pay attention to. And we're either realize that a particular product doesn't have the value and we have to get into the commodity mix at that particular point, or we really dig in, sell the value, and make sure that we're communicating to our customers. I mean, our sales force is very technical in nature. They're all experts in what they do, and they're going to attempt to sell the value to the customer of why cheap tape is a bad idea or why it's not as effective as they would think. And then we're going to also combine that with our supply chain excellence. So 50% of what we do is technical expert. The other 50% is supply chain. So we're deploying six trucks, six straights, and a tractor every day. We're using a tremendous amount of software in our system to move products efficiently. to give it a tremendous amount of visibility. So it's also going to be about getting the right thing to the right place at the right time after we've decided what the technical solution is. So we're doing all of it, we're bundling all of it together to make our offering look different than everyone else's.
Well, it seems like everything you're doing has the customer in mind. I mean, the partnership with the customer seems to be a prevailing theme, customer service. And if you want to describe some more of the things that just go through the supply chain that ultimately is a benefit for the customer that you guys are starting.
Yeah, so I've talked about high energy and I've talked about high tech. The other piece is high touch. So those are the three things: high energy, high tech, high touch. So for example, we have a supply agreement with a local customer. They're very limited on space. So we show up each morning at 5:45 with a truckload of material. And then at the end of the day, they're out of packaging materials, and then we show up the next day. We deliver to them 252 times a year, one day's worth of production, and at the end of every day, the material's gone. So they're leveraging their space, they're leveraging their capital, and they're pushing back on us as a supply chain partner to make sure that we have the right thing to the right place at the right time.
Awesome. It's the Greenport question. So you want to tell us about, just recently that the Greenport Congress conference was here in Baltimore, first time ever, and you went up to speak. Want to talk a little bit about the Greenport Congress and what they're doing and what your involvement is.
Sure. Yeah, I was contacted by the World Trade Center Institute because, as you stated, the Greenport Congress had made a choice to come to the United States for the first time and come to Baltimore. And part of that's the great work that Ports America is doing at Seagirt and Dundalk. They received a lot of awards for productivity, sustainability, any number of different things. So that's what made Baltimore the target. And historically, they've been really focused on the origination terminal, the trip in between, and then the arrival terminal. What they wanted me to do was to back up one and talk about what their customers could do differently to make their packaging more efficient, to move through the channel easier or better or more cost effectively than it does now. So for us, that would be things like making the product smaller, making the product lighter, getting more into a ship, whatever that looked like, more into a pallet, more into a ship. So for us, it's about looking at the current package and making it more efficient, smaller, lighter, reducing materials that would be involved while not sacrificing performance. So I was there to give them maybe a look one step back into the process as far as what their customers are experiencing, and then in hopes that they would maybe partner with their customers to say, look, you could get your product through our shipping chains or through the shipping supply chain better or more cost effectively if you would. A big focus of the entire shipping industry is sustainability as it relates to carbon footprint, as it relates to efficiencies of the ships, how much fuel they're burning, emissions. So there would be a benefit for them and the environment if they could get they could get 25% more goods on the ship than they do now, and if they did that by leveraging packaging as one of the tactics to do it. And that's what they had me speak on.
A follow-up to your question about competition, because I'm always thinking about competition. Rather than the international competitor, business experts have said that if you have a product that can't be Amazoned, which is a verb now, you're safe. You answered part of it, although it wasn't a direct answer to that question, that the big stuff can't be Amazon because they can, they're not gonna make this customized packaging stuff. The tapes maybe can be Amazon, but answer the question, is that a concern, and do you think about that, and how does that relate to the products that you make?
Yes, so we have a lot of conversations about being Amazoned, and yes, we use it as a verb. And one of the things, just to take it a step further, is, there's a saying we use around here is that the company that takes you out likely will look nothing like you. So if you ask the hotels about Airbnb, or if you ask the taxi cabs about Uber, if you ask Whole Foods about Amazon, they were never looking at them as even potential competitors. So while we're focused on our more direct known competitors, we're also very sensitive to who could be in our blind spot that thinks we are attractive. Jeff Bezos says, your profit is my opportunity. So while it may or may not be Bezos in this particular condition, it could be somebody else that's in a relatively similar business, like a Staples, who looks at office supplies and says, well, we're doing office supplies. We have transportation already allocated to these customers. Why wouldn't we also sell packaging? So yes, we're sensitive to it. We pay attention to it, and really what we do is we listen to our customers. You know, if we understand what our customers value and we're creating solutions around that, it should make it more difficult for other competitors to approach. The taxi cab industry wasn't listening to its customer. So that's what we really focus on. So
you have more of a partnership relationship with your supply chain.
Yes.
So at the lunch you were talking about, which I thought was interesting, that when someone's designing a product, your clients are usually, you're in there at the same time designing the packaging.
Yes.
You wanna maybe just talk through the process of getting a engineered, customized package along with the design of the product, how important that is, instead of someone showing up with a product and saying, here, I need a box, you know, ship this out for me.
Right, yeah, so we're always encouraging customers and people that are inventing and designing, whether we're at the Foundry or OpenWorks or somebody that's inventing, to try to start thinking about the packaging earlier. Historically, people have finally, you know, they've finished their widget, they have it in a position where they think they're ready to go to market, and they call us in, and we tell them if they had cut an inch here or if they had fortified this there, that they could have reduced freight, they could have made the packaging easier, they could have driven cost out of the process and the product in some way. So we try to engage as early as possible. Our most capable customers get us in at the right time. There is a spot where it's a little bit too early. I mean, we can't be so early in the process that if you don't have a reasonable understanding of your form factor and certain pieces, it would be too early. But we'd like to get involved earlier. We had a customer who approached us recently who had invented a very cost-effective desktop 3D printer. Great piece of equipment, great price point, education. When we looked at it and took the dimensions of it, we realized that if they had just squeezed some inches out here, inches out there, it would have had a really big effect on the freight and possibly would have gotten them into markets they wouldn't have gotten to otherwise. So if you look at trying to attack from an e-commerce model perspective and you're looking at freight, if you're shaving an inch here, an inch there, which then becomes critical for what's called dimensional weight, it could be the difference between getting across the Mississippi River. It could be the difference between getting into the Midwest where, you know, freight would be a problem. So we're always encouraging customers to engage us as early as they can. Big customers like our aerospace, I mean, we're working with them early in the process where as soon as they have a reasonable idea of the form factor, they're sending us three-dimensional models. Our packaging engineering team is looking at them and trying to understand what the critical requirements are, where's it going, how's it getting there, how fragile is it, and then every single step in the supply chain. So from we make the box, they put their part in it, and then every single thing from point A to point B, and then also how does it get onto the wing of the airplane? We need to make sure that we understand how their customer's gonna interact with it so we're not creating a problem in their plant when they're trying to turn out two or three or four airplanes a day and on an A320 line or something like that. So we're involved early and collaborate as aggressively as we can. And we have a lot of automation, software automation that's deployed around that.
Awesome. So what's the future look like for Arnold Packaging?
Heavy in automation. I see automation as the future with unemployment now at 3.9% in Maryland and in the United States. Workforce is going to be a big challenge, and skilled workforce is going to be a big challenge. So I see us fitting in to help our customers to get more productive and looking at the relationship between output and input, which is what productivity is, and getting the humans doing the right job in the right place, and then deploying machines, whether it be, you know, robotics arms or just a, you know, simple automation. It could be case erecting, case sealing, things that aren't as quite as glitzy or glamorous as shiny robotic arms, but they're very effective where we can use the same amount of input being manpower and get more output. But the real goal is to get the productivity quotient leveled so that we have the right people doing the right thing. So automation is going to be heavy for us. Continuing to partner more deeply with customers and understand what their challenges are. Our customers have never been more challenged from a global perspective. Their competition is global. We have some barriers, as we talked about, with freight and some things, but they may not. So they're now looking at the competitive landscape, and they need to make sure that they're viable from a competitive perspective. And our job is to help them understand what their challenges are, what keeps them up at night, and then to make sure that our solutions and our futuring offerings are going to mirror or be collaborative to what they're doing too.
Can you meet the, or do you have plans, or your growth plans? I mean, you have tremendous growth in the 20 years since you've been president, doubled the amount of employees and five times the revenue. Can you sustain that for the next 20 years?
I think we can. Yes, we will always grow. And I will say at every turn, when we run up against capacity constraints, whether it's transportation, space, manpower, I've always made the decision to double down and reinvest. I don't see that stopping anytime soon. Right now, we're just a one location operation. We primarily run one shift. So we're looking at growth organically and through through acquisition. We have some acquisition opportunities, some in this market, some out of this market. We'd like to expand geographically into southern Pennsylvania, out into the mid-Atlantic area. I mean, basically, our mantra is anything within 3 hours, and that includes airplanes. So if we can get there from point to point in 3 hours, we consider that part of our geographical target, either organically or through acquisition.
Awesome.
Good segue to that. You talked about organic growth. Organic growth to me is selling more of the same product to the same customers, selling the product you're making to new customers, or varying your product, coming up with a new product, innovating new product to sell to both new and existing customers. So what bucket do you think you fall into that can sustain organic growth?
So it's all three for us. I mean, so I agree on the three positions of organic growth that you stated. So yes, there's a lot of customers that we are not selling to. We have about 1,000 purchasing customers in this market. We are far from saturation, so there's lots of opportunities to sell our current lineup to our existing customers. We're always looking for products to add to our product line that makes sense, and by that I mean they're in our lane. A lot of our friendly competitors or even partners in the industry, meaning they're likely in another geographic area, have ventured into janitorial, they ventured into office products as a way to try to sell more products to existing customers. We've looked at it a few different times, and it's just far enough out of our lane that that's probably not a direction that we will go. Now that said, we didn't have an automation division a year ago. So I looked at that and said, all right, here's an opportunity. Our customers are asking for help. There seems to be a shortage of supply. There's not enough engineering. Our customers don't have the capacity internally to design these solutions. So we got into automation in about 4 days. You know, I looked at it and said, we need to do this. This is the future. And then we need to talk about how we're going to go to market. We realized quickly that it was going to be tough to sell a robotic arm under the name Arnold Packaging, especially if we were in, let's say, a machine shop that really didn't have a big packaging component. So it made sense to break out that automation division. So organic for us means all of it, and we're considering all different pieces of organic growth.
You've talked about staffing, and it sounds like you've got a solid staff here.
Love that question.
Talk about, when I sit down with business owners, their number one problem is recruiting and retaining good talent. You already mentioned 3.9% unemployment, very tight labor market. How do you recruit and retain staff? And when you answer that, maybe throw in something about culture, because
it's why work for Arnold Packaging. Right?
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So. Just a couple of years ago, workforce and workforce development was a huge problem for us. We were really struggling to get the workforce that we needed. We had lots of new opportunities. Our manufacturing division is up 96% over the last 2 years. And while we have some automation opportunities, we're generally bringing on headcount and staffing. You know, when you're making a wood box, there aren't a lot of automation options. We generally are having to bring on a person to drive a nail, cut a piece of wood. So we had to get very creative. We got involved with any number of different organizations, two primarily, one being Catholic Charities and Christopher's Place, which is a 60-bed transition house here in Baltimore, where they do a lot of work with reentry. So 11 of our 21 employees have come out of reentry, meaning that they've spent some time in the correctional institute, or they've spent some time there. Center for Urban Families is similar, but it's generally people are looking for a shot. You know, they're looking for an opportunity. They're going to have a hard time with their past getting through background checks or certain things. So we've been very successful in leveraging that part of the workforce and bringing them in. Our VP and General Manager, Colin Jezian, does a great job in training them, making them feel very comfortable, feel like they have a home, and that's just part of the culture. I mean, that's what we've built and part of the culture here. They feel comfortable and welcome, and they're challenged. You know, we're grateful to have them. We couldn't get the product. I mean, we are incredibly synergistic in that we need them as much as they need us.
This has been CEO Minutes, brought to you by Offutt Kerman, attorneys at law, your perfect legal partner. For more information and to tell your entrepreneurial story, visit us on the web at ceominutes.com.